All right, y'all. Good morning. I've been told I have about 38 minutes, so I'm going to set my clock so that I don't anger the folks that are making the recordings. They said that they don't like it much when the speakers go over 38 minutes because they can't fit two lessons on one CD for the people that want CDs. So I'm going to turn on my own little personal clock here, and if it beeps at 38 minutes, then I apologize for that, but I don't have any idea what's going to happen whenever this thing finishes the countdown, so that's we'll all be learning in this experience. So we're glad that you're here today. This session is for elders. The subject is pondering the presbytery. Elders, lords, their examples. We're going to begin in 1 Peter chapter 5 because that is, I believe, the text that applies especially for this lesson. And we'll read 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, and then we'll come back and make some observations about it as we get going. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. The elders who are among you, I exhort, I, who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also partakers of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not being as lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you shall receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. As we begin, let me ask the question, why do leaders do what they do? Why do leaders do what they do? I believe most often the answer can be given because they believe it's the right thing to do. Isn't that true? I mean, if you're in a position of leadership and you believe you have the knowledge in order to get people from here to where it is that you believe that they ought to be, you're going to do the things that you believe are the right things. The problem with that is Proverbs chapter 21 verse 2 says, "The way of every man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts." You know, men don't wake up in the morning and just immediately say, you know what, I'm going to be irresponsible, I'm going to be overbearing, and I'm not going to serve as I should, and let me see the damage that I can do to the church. The way people begin to lead, especially as we're talking about this hour, elderships, the way that they lead is because, in a lot of instances, they lead the way that they've seen others lead before them. Isn't that true of all of you men who are in here because you're elders? You watched an eldership at one point conduct themselves in ways and means that you looked at and you said, this is obviously an example of the way that things ought to be. We lead because we've seen others lead. And effectiveness in the local church can sometimes begin to erode over time unless elders remember and make times like this at the focal point where we can think about ourselves and evaluate and grow. And I say ourselves, I'm not an elder. I'm not an elder or a son of the elder. And it's interesting to me because one of my elders is here, the men that we serve with presently. Four of the guys that I served with previously at this congregation are here this morning, and I know that a number of you have served for years at your congregations. But it ought to be that we take time to appreciate topics like this and maybe, as much as possible, let me encourage you to kind of wipe the slate clean and think about, okay, if he's talking about somebody else, and then if we're just starting from scratch and looking at this, I want to evaluate myself and really understand whether or not it is that I'm lording or being an example. We're going to take some time just for a moment and define lords and examples here as the words given from 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3. The word for lord here in this context is katakurioi. All right, you hear the word kurios, which is lord. Every time the word Lord Jesus Christ is translated, it's usually the word kurios. However, here's a addition to it, a prefix that's added to it, kata, which means down, which means under. Lords, in this instance, in this word, means to bring under one's power, to subject somebody to one's rule, to subdue or to be the master of. I like the idea of somebody saying, I'm going to put you under my thumb. I'm going to get you right where it is that you need to be. You're looking at somebody who is going to be controlling, who is going to try and exercise dominion over, to scorn. Word also has to do with tyranny. Who do we think about when we think about tyranny? Hostility, somebody having a domineering spirit. All of those are part of this word that's given in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3, meaning, Lord, I see you as my underlings. I'm the boss, and I'm going to try and rule to my own advantage. The word example, in the same context, not being as lords over those entrusted to you, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3, but being examples. The word example is tupos, it's a type. We used to have these old devices way, way back when that were called typewriters. And you understand that as I struck the T key, the little type of the T is going to smack that paper really hard and it's going to give an impression. That's the word example. It is an impression, a figure that's formed by a blow or a mark. Interestingly enough, we know that we're not supposed to be lords over. We're not supposed to be people who are pushing God's people under their thumb. But instead, we're supposed to be a type. If you look, or if you want to write a cross-reference to Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, here's something that's somewhat paradoxical, at least if we don't look at it necessarily in the right context. Because the Bible there is commanding, particularly the congregation, it says, obey those who have the rule over you and be submissive. Now wait a minute. Here's somebody who's not supposed to lord over, put you under my thumb, but here is somebody who has the rule over. A supreme challenge, and the one point I want to get across this morning is this. The supreme challenge of any eldership is, how do you rule over without lording over? And how do you be like the Lord without trying to be the Lord? The supreme challenge for any eldership is to rule over without lording over, and how to be like the Lord without trying to be the Lord. I'm going to open it up for discussion at this time as we move into our second point. We define lords and examples, but what does lording look like? I don't necessarily even want you to think maybe in an elder context, but have you known people in your life who are tyrannical, who want to try and push somebody under their thumb? What are characteristics of people that are lords in this instance?
Manipulative.
Okay. I'm going to repeat all these characteristics for the sake of the recording, so whoever's listening. Sorry?
A dictator,
okay? It's my way or it's the highway. Exactly right. What else?
Prideful.
We'll come back to that one. Yes?
They tend to be obnoxious,
okay? What else? In some instances, absolutely, Charles, they are insecure. What else? How do they deal with people? Not very well, okay, to say the least. What else? And you find people like this governing by threats. Ross mentioned manipulative. They govern by emotional intimidation. They like to flaunt the power and say, well, you need to respect me because of my title. You need to respect me because of my authority. Lords use their political power to get their way, to move the pieces the way that they think that they ought to be moved. Authoritarianism is the byproduct of arrogance. It's a byproduct of pride. You know, lords, generally speaking, suppose their superior office proves that they're inherently superior individuals. Thus, I'm better than you. You see, I'm in this position and you're not. Therefore, I'm going to use this and I'm going to lord it over you. They assume that they have the natural right to do so. And as you look at what the root cause of that is, it is absolutely pride. In the characteristics that Paul gives to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 3, what's the danger that he lists that ought to stand out in your mind as an elder? Beware, not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he should fall into the same condemnation of the devil. You know what lording is? Lording is pride. Lording is looking down your nose at somebody else because I feel like I'm in a superior position. I feel like I'm in a superior point of view. So, understanding that there are exhibitions of lording, what are symptoms of lording? What are symptoms of lording? Turn your Bible just for a moment. Hold your finger here from 1 Peter chapter 3 back to James chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3 and James chapter 3 have a lot to do with one another. look down at the very beginning. You want a good passage to commit to memory. When it is that you're counseling with people whose lives are a wreck and a mess, and you're talking to people who are in a hard position, what you've got to evaluate is the wisdom that they've been operating with. Note what verse 13 says, and we'll read down through verse 16. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by his good conducts that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Note this next part. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, what are we talking about? We're talking about pride, exactly right. If you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. What's boasting? It's pride and lying against the truth. This wisdom doesn't descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. Verse 16, for where envy and self-seeking are or exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Where envying, self-seeking exist, there's. If you want to understand what's going on in somebody's life, if you want to really look at what wisdom they've been using, look at the product. Look at the symptoms. Where I see envying and self-seeking, where I see confusion in every evil thing, there's been envying and self-seeking. So again, a lot of these situations and symptoms I want to list before you today are symptomatic of lording and prideful leadership that's been going on. Okay? Realize, number one, when you have evidence of lording or when you have a symptom of lording, it usually comes with a spirit of hopelessness. It usually comes with a spirit of hopelessness. The Proverbs writer said, Proverbs 29 and verse 2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked man rules, the people groan. How's your congregation? Does it seem like there is an air or a spirit of hopelessness, that things are never going to get better? It could be that because of this confusion and every evil thing, there's been envying and self-seeking that's been taking place. A spirit of hopelessness. Number two, a stifling of a cooperative spirit. A stifling of a cooperative spirit. Remember 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 4. After Solomon was dead, his son Rehoboam took the power. And Jeroboam, who had already seen the prophet, and the prophet, you remember, tore off 10 pieces and gave it to to Jeroboam, said, if you'll serve me, I'll give you and make your heritage secure. And Jeroboam led the people there to Rehoboam and said to him, listen, your dad made it tough on us. Your father, Solomon, man, he made it difficult for us as people. And they came to Rehoboam, and they had a legitimate request, it seems. Could you make things lighter on us? Could you make things easier on us? You remember what Rehoboam's answer was? You think my dad was tough. You think my dad was bad. You just wait. There is an air of dictates from on high. You have got to respect me because of my position and because of my authority. And there's not so much a cooperative spirit to say, let's sit down and let's look and see how the Lord wants us to handle this. Though I don't know that he was an elder, you find in 3 John verse 9, a man by the name of Diotrephes. Could you say Diotrephes was prideful? And the answer is yes, absolutely. He set himself up as preeminent in the church. And you see the effect that it had. Diotrephes does not receive the brethren. He does not receive us as apostles. What's the problem? Diotrephes is puffed up with pride, and there is a lack of a cooperative spirit. Note number three, there is a preference for the opinion of individuals. There's a preference for the opinion of individuals. Going back to Rehoboam, 1 Kings chapter 12, you remember which counselors he liked? Oh, he liked his friends, the ones he'd grown up with. He liked the ones that told him exactly already what he wanted to hear. Question becomes, when we've already got our mind made up about what's right, and somebody comes and they bring a case before us and say, listen, that may not necessarily be the best course of action. Is it something that we just say, oh, that's just your opinion. I'm going to go ahead and do it. Again, what is that? In a lot of instances, it's pride. We want to listen to the people that make us feel like we're justified.
You know, again, the people bring up a reasonable request, but it wasn't what Rehoboam wanted to do. There was pride involved. Number four, there is a silencing of criticism against us. Silencing of criticism against us. 3 John 10, going back to Diotrephes. He forbids those who want to receive the apostles doing what? Putting them out of the church. You know what? Any speech, we're not going to tolerate any speech that has a legitimate question against the leadership direction. It doesn't matter if John or anybody else, John the Apostle, you know what? If he's questioning me and questioning whether I'm truly following Jesus, you know, I'm just going to take that as a personal insult. Are you questioning me? Are you really questioning? You know that I'm an elder. You know what? I'm not going to tolerate that. Number five, a pushing down of those who need help. Evidence of lording in a congregation or symptoms of lording, a pushing down of those who need help. Jesus told a parable in Luke 18 about a certain judge from a city who didn't fear God or regard man. You remember that? There was a widow there who came and she said to this man, "Get justice for me from my adversary." She had a legitimate complaint against this man that had wronged her. And the judge listened and he listened and he listened and he listened. And he just finally said, "She wearies me." And we have people that come to the eldership or come to the leadership in a congregation and they need help legitimately. And sometimes it is because elderships, lording elderships, set their own example and their own agenda and say, we can't really be bothered with that right now. We'll put this on the back burner. We'll deal with our problem in a month or so whenever we get our building situation worked out or when we get the new carpet installed or whatever it is. But you find a family in crisis and it doesn't fit with our agenda. And so what we try and do is we try and push those people off to the side and say, we'll deal with that later. Evidence, symptoms of lording. Number six, cruel and nasty words. Cruel and nasty words. Diotrephes, 3 John 10, he doesn't receive the apostles. He doesn't receive the brethren. He instead, anybody that raises a legitimate complaint, he puts them out of the church. But it says that he, against the apostles, was prating against us, he said, with malicious words. How's the habit of speech? Is it that it is complaining and disputing? Philippians 2 verse 14. Prating with malicious and evil words. He's a tattler. He likes to go and be excessively wordy on things that are trivial matters, as the word implies. It's a means to keep people down. When you talk bad about somebody, and when you run their name through the mud, and when you take somebody and they destroy their reputation, well, that person's going to be a whole lot less likely to bring up a legitimate complaint later on, aren't they? You're going to break their spirit, put them in their place, under your thumb, and that's going to happen. If the rule is Lord's, the only choice is to try and keep that power by keeping others down and keeping others from challenging that power. Last one that I thought of, you may think of some others, a disrespect to the Lord and His authority. A disrespect of Lord and His authority. What are symptoms of lording? A disrespect of the Lord and His authority. Flip back to, if you're there, still there, I'm going to flip back to 1 Peter chapter 5 one more time. 1 Peter chapter 5. Note the emphasis on the Lord and His authority. Verse 2. Shepherd the flock of God who is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly. Jump down to verse 4. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. Shepherds, what you can't forget is that you are modeling your life after the chief shepherd. And you are taking every decision, every thought, and every attitude and trying to look at Jesus and say, how did He respond to this? How did He treat people? How does He want me to be a shepherd? Jesus never had to pull rank in order to get people to, well, in order to make His point. Jesus never shamed His critics by maliciousness because they disagreed with Him. Paul used a situation with Philemon where he could have absolutely said, Philemon, you need to accept Onesimus because I'm an apostle of Jesus Christ and you've got to listen to me. Instead, he appealed to him by love. And if we as people, if you as shepherds, those of you who are, if you want to try and have to muscle the church into submission, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. We're all people in God's household. Elders, never be too busy looking down on others that you're too busy to look up to Jesus. There's a saying, our theme for this year at Graver Road is, I am a sheep and the Lord is my shepherd. I read a lot of books on shepherding just because I don't know a whole lot about it. I've never been a shepherd or a son of a shepherd, just like elders, you know. And I've read a whole lot of books on shepherds, but one of the ones that impressed me was a book called The Yorkshire Shepherdess, about a lady who left her home in England and went out to the countryside and basically started from the ground up as being a shepherd. And she said there's a saying among shepherds in England. She said there's nothing worse than a running shepherd. There's nothing worse than a running shepherd, meaning if the shepherd has so lost control of his sheep that he's running around putting out fires that he's created, you've got to ask the question, are they doing it wrong? Are they lording or are they shepherding? Gentlemen, as I say these things, pride is so insidious that we don't know that it's a problem in our lives. We can clearly point it out in others, but sometimes it's so difficult for us to see in our own lives. And just looking over these list of symptoms, maybe you can see evidence of those things, but if you see that there's some of these things that maybe apply to you or the congregation where it is that you're a part of, may I encourage maybe soliciting an online or an anonymous survey of the congregation about how they feel about the direction of the congregation, about how they feel about the leadership, and just be willing to realize that you're trying to do this for the glory of God and for the glory of His church. But the fact that you want to be the best leader that you possibly can be, and sometimes it requires an observation. I love my wife. She's here this morning, the only lady here in the room. And there are some times that I say, Catherine, how did I do? And she's like, El Stinko, you know. I know that she's not telling me that because she hates me or because she's trying to put me under her thumb, but because she loves me, and it's iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. And we ought to be humble enough to accept criticism and be humble enough to accept the fact that it may be that we're not doing the job that we think that we ought to be, or the job that we think that we are. So let's spend our last few minutes here talking about what shepherding looks like. What's shepherding look like? What does shepherd examples look like? We're going to spend our time here in 1 Peter chapter 5 because I believe he gives six of them in contrast. Maybe you've never noticed these before. I didn't until I actually began to study these, but they are evident. What do shepherding examples look like? Six contrast, 1 Peter 5. Number one, be over them, but be among them. Be over them, but be among them. Look at verse 2. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers in your midst. It's a matter of being present with the people of God. What does that mean? I mean that we're all attending, that we're all sitting in the same assembly on Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night. What does it mean? It means practically, you as an elder are going to vary the people that you talk to. Means practically that you're going to vary the subjects that you talk about. Practically, it could mean that you as an elder vary the places that you sit in the congregation. Catherine and I have adopted we've been at Graber Road for a year now, but we didn't want to have our pew in the Graber Road congregation, particularly because we're a congregation about 220, I guess, on Sunday morning. But if we only sat over on the left-hand side or on the right-hand side, we would never visit with those people that were way over here, because by the time we got over there, they would already be gone. And so some mornings after the muster, the men getting together in the back room, I'll have to go and stand in the back and just look, over the congregation to try and find where my wife has sat with our children that morning. But moving around, maybe as the invitation is offered, going to the back and catching some of those people that are on their way out the back door because they think services are over. Maybe spending more time in the foyer or in the parking lot or standing right there at the back door so that there can't be anybody that slips by. What are you doing? You're spending time among the people. Some people have adopted the 15-minute rule. I'm not going to talk to anybody that I regularly talk to for 15 minutes after services. You know why? Because those people are usually going to find me. People that you usually go to lunch with, they're usually going to be there. But what happens is that we turn inward and we say, oh, there's that guy that I love. There's that guy that I love to talk to. And so I'm going to go and I'm going to visit with them to the exclusion of everybody else. Among them. Visit with the people that are there. I believe that elders especially need to be present at every event of the church. Even in the morning, be there for the ladies' days. Stand there in the foyer, greet the ladies as they come in, and as they close the doors to have their Ladies' Day speaker go, that's when you can go and maybe help cook lunch or spend time. I believe elders need to be at every single youth devotional, and not the same elders. I believe elders need to spend time showing the works of the church and saying, we love you and we support you, and we appreciate the work that you're doing and the work that's going on here. We had a door knocking recently at Graber Road. It's the first one that they've done in years. And it was wonderful because all seven of our shepherds showed up. And they were there among the congregation, encouraging and giving the deacon that was in charge of that kudos and pats on the back. And they were excited to be there. And it shows that we're not just sitting in a room offering dictates from on high, but we're there among the congregation. I care about what's going on here. That's the message that people receive. I'm invested in the success of the church. Be over them, but be among them. Verse 2. Look at the second one. Be over them, but be serving them. Be over them, but be serving them. Again, chapter 5 and verse 2. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers. Serving as overseers. Serving. What positions have you put yourself in where you can serve the people that you shepherd? Mentioned in my lesson yesterday, both lists, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, and Titus chapter 1 and verse 8, you find the characteristic of an elder that's hospitable. When was the last time that you as an elder served people in your home? When it was that you hosted a visiting family from a different region or just maybe moved to the area where you'd hosted those people into your home to say, I love you and I want to get to know you better. Hospitality, gentlemen, is a habit. It's not the same as going and watching a game with the same people that we always hang out with. It's not spending time with just our own little inner group or inner circle of people. It's opening up our home so that we can get to better know the people that we're among. And elders, if you're not in the practice of hospitality and opening up your home and inviting people over and saying, listen, what's value to be about Jesus? And having spiritual conversations across the table. I know that you were struggling with the loss of your mother last month. How are you doing with that? Is there anything that I can do for you? Let's have a prayer together over this meal. Let's have a prayer together about what's going on in your life. It's about sacrificially serving them. I want to know you. I want to know what makes Jesus special to you. I want to know about your struggles. I want to know how I can help you. I want to serve you in whatever way I can. You know what's going to happen? I had a member tell me one time that when I invited him into my office. He was just there on a weekday, and I said, come on in. He said, well, this is like coming into the principal's office. I said, I wonder how often people get that mentality whenever it is that the elders say, hey, we'd like to meet with you.
Come on in to our office. What have I done? What have I done? But if you've got a special relationship where you've been in a position where you've been serving those people, you know what's going to happen is that those people know that you love them and you care about their soul. It's not just that they've done something wrong that they're going to be reprimanded for, but they realize that you're saying something for their good. Old saying is true. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Absolutely applies in this situation. Look at principle number 3. Be over them, but be kind towards them. Be over them, but be kind towards them. Still in verse 2, note the contrasts. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly. Do I have to? My kids say that sometimes. Verse 2, not by constraint, not by compulsion. Do I have to? We use the same word as 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. We want people to give how? Cheerfully, yes? Not by compulsion. Do I have to give that amount? Do I have to put that in the plate? We don't know people. We know God doesn't want that kind of giver. God wants a cheerful giver. And so it is, God wants the same thing from His elders. God wants the same thing from the elders of the flock. Not by constraint, not do I have to, but willingly, I would be glad to. Well, you get ready to go out to eat on a Sunday evening, and you have one of your fellow elders come up to you and say, "Brother, there's a crisis. There's a family that's about to split apart. There's something we've got to deal with. And you've got dinner plans." Are you going to treat that person? How are you going to treat the people? How are you going to sit across the table? Come on. By compulsion. Not by compulsion, but willingly. Patience. You know, I would counsel, if you don't have the practice, a mandatory yearly or every 2 year counseling seminar for elders. I know there's gentlemen that do that kind of thing and that are very, very skilled at it, but just to keep the understanding that in order to be willing as a counselor, you have to have some training in that aspect. Because sometimes we know exactly what's best for somebody else, and I'm going to defer to Buddy, and we as men are problem solvers, aren't we? We see the problem directly, and we want to try and, well, this is the problem, this is the solution, you need to do this right now, get it done. And that's not necessarily what people need, and that's not necessarily the approach that some people need. But understanding that there's kindness that's involved and willing kindness, being kind, being compassionate, being tender, being patient, all of those things come with skill, with age, with wisdom, and also, I believe, with training. Number 4, be over them, but be eager to help them. This goes hand in hand with the last point. Be over them, but be eager to help them. Still in verse 2, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly. Not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. A man once told me about an elder that he served under, I guess, or served him. But he said the way that this elder would come in the foyer in the morning is that he would shake hands, but he would always be looking over to see if there was anybody that was there that, not watching, but just if there was anybody maybe of higher prominence that he wanted to be shaking hands with. And over time he realized he was looking for visitors or members to schmooze. You've been schmoozed? It's not pleasant. Being among them, being willing to help them, and being kind to them and ready to help, it's not a matter of schmoozing the people in the foyer, but it's a matter of saying, how can I serve this person? I appreciate, and it may be a regular practice that you'd like to do, an eldership or an elder or two, maybe, if that's all you can muster, or if there's other guys that have gone the other way, and you know that a member's having surgery that week. And you know that they're kind of worried about it, or even if they're not worried about it. Hey, we as your shepherds would like to pull you over here in this classroom. Can we hold hands together and can we have a prayer about your surgery? I know that you just lost your loved one. We're going to take some time just right here after services, and we're going to pull you aside out of the foyer talk, out of the foyer chat, and we're going to pray with you about that. What you're doing is you're cultivating a spirit of trust and a spirit of understanding and a spirit of love and a spirit of serving, beginning with the eldership. We're willing to do these things and to talk about these things with people because that's what we're about. That's God's heritage. We don't want anybody to feel like nobody cares about them, or the preacher doesn't go to the surgery, that nobody's going to call and nobody's going to check up on them. But it makes you and makes us painfully aware of this is a soul, and this is a person that's made in God's image. Number five, be over them, but be examples to them. Be over them, but be examples to them. We're in verse 3. Nor is being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. One of the most humbling questions that you can ask, based upon what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Was Paul saying that as a matter of pride? Was he saying that as a matter of, you know, Corinthians, you imitate me as I imitate? He didn't. He said that because he so evaluated himself and his relationship with the Lord and his following of the Lord, that he could tell those Corinthians, listen, you can look to me as an example. I'm trying to faithfully follow in the steps of Jesus. You ever ask that question of yourself? Can I tell somebody, listen, you can follow my example in this. You can follow my faith in how it is that I'm conducting myself and the person I'm trying to live. Remember the Titans was a movie several years ago, but they were trying to get a ragtag group of football players to play together, and the captain comes up and he's brandishing this guy and saying, listen, you've got this great talent. Why is it that you're not using it the way you have to? And the man just simply says, listen, attitude reflects leadership. We're back to symptoms of lording. Attitude reflects leadership. When we look to elders, it ought to be that the elders are the truest types of Jesus in the church. And as we say, follow me as I'm following Jesus, we're giving people an understanding that I'm going to walk in his steps no matter what. Last one. Be over them, but be under him. Be over them, but be under him. Chapter 5, verse 4. When the chief shepherd appears, you shall receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. When you deal with the congregation that you're a shepherd of, for those of you who are elders again, you're dealing with another man's property. It is God's heritage. Don't ever be guilty of looking down on God's heritage because you're too good to look up to the chief shepherd. If you look continually in the context of 1 Peter chapter 5, you find the admonition, verse 5, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves, that includes elders. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about as a roaring lion. Now, wait a minute. I go back to 1 Timothy chapter 3, and it says that I can fall into, hey, there it is, I can fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Who's the devil looking for? He's looking for those people who are full of pride. If I can bring up one more thing, and then the lesson will be yours. 1 Peter is a book about suffering. 1 Peter is a book about Christian suffering among particularly the people that were there in the Roman Empire. And you follow the word suffering all the way through. And you follow this word suffering through the first four chapters, and it occurs a number of times because Peter's saying, you're about to suffer. Get ready for it. Or when you do suffer, make sure that you're ready to give an answer to everyone who asks you the reason for the hope that's within you with meekness and fear. You make sure that you're not suffering for doing evil, but suffering for doing good, because it's going to be a credit for you. You know where the word suffering ends? It ends there in chapter 5, verse 1. The elders who are among you I exhort, I, who am a fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ. He's going to revisit it back down to verse 9 and talking about going back and saying, resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But it's remarkably absent when it talks about the leadership. Leaders, it shouldn't be that the Church of Christ is the place where sufferings and difficulties and hardships and grumblings occur because of elders who are lords and not examples. The church ought to be a refuge and a place where we can know that we're going to go and be built up, and we're going to be strengthened, and we're going to be cared for because we've got a great group of men who are shepherding us. It ought to be that we each have enough humility to ask the question, Master, is it I? But it ought to be also that we look at ourselves and we say, I want to just follow Jesus. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your attention.